Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Dalet. Now, let me just point out to you how we have gotten to starting a discussion about Kohanim and if they're going to be burning Kodesh, which is Tameh, and so what in the world? How did this get here? Well, it's very simple, really. Remember that back on yesterday's daf, on daf Yud Gimel, so we spoke about over there that we are going to be Sorafim, Trumas, Tmeos, Vitluyos, Vitahiras once we get to the sixth hour. So that raises the question, I mean, what right do we have to burn Truma? Doesn't the Torah say, Beferish, Mishmeret Trumotai? Mishmeret Trumotai means you have to take care of it, make sure it doesn't become Tame, certainly make sure it doesn't become burned and completely destroyed. This was the question that I mentioned to you yesterday. Tosfos asks back on Daf Yud Gimel. And apparently, I mean, you can't tell me because I'm mechuyev to burn it. I'm certainly not mechuyev to burn it because remember, I can always do bittel. And bittel takes care of the whole problem, my chometz. So why in the world am I putting myself in a position of burning truma? So it seems to be saying that because of the fact that this truma is going to be osir because it's chometz, so then for all intents and purposes, it's kaput. But it isn't kaput now, it's only kaput in the seventh hour. So this seems to imply that once the Rabbanan have declared this truma to be inedible, it no longer is included in the din of Mishmeret Trumotai, because I only have to take care of truma in something that is going to protect it and allow me to eat it. If in any event it's going to have to be destroyed, there's no way for me to protect it, so then it makes sense to say that the Torah was never mazir on us on Mishmeret Trumotai. Now, that makes a lot of sense. Whatever the source of the problem is, whether it's a deraisa or a bona, the bottom line is that it's become inedible, and therefore, l'chora, that's what the Gemara seems to imply. Now, that leads us directly to the question, a general question. I mean, so what does this mean? That we're allowed, because of the fact that we've got a one level of problem, so we're allowed, therefore, to mix every other level of the problem. So if we've got an Isser problem, then we can make it a Tuma problem. And is there a difference between what level Tuma? Is it any level of Tuma? This is what triggered today's discussion about Rabbi Chanina Sgana Kohanim, who now brings us into the broader scope of this question, which affects, in general, the issue of whether we're allowed to burn things of a lesser level of Tuma with a higher level of Tuma, if they're going to become more Tuma, if we're burning them anyway, and does it make a difference whether it's a Deoraisa Tuma or it's a Drabbanan Tuma? Does it make a difference whether it's an Isser versus Tuma or anything which makes it inedible? Does the level of the state of edibility in terms of spoilage and so on, would spoilage make a difference in terms of Mishmeret Trumotai? How about the question of Suffolk? If anyway I'm not going to be allowed to eat it because there's a suffix about whether it's tameh, do I then just ignore it because it's a suffix? So what the heck? I can't eat it anyway, so let it rot, so to speak. And what do I care if it becomes worse off than it was before? Now, these are all the questions that are automatically raised in your mind when you get to this issue that we needed to deal with back on Yud Dalet, on Yud Gimel, which was the question of why are we burning perfectly good Truma. And remember, we even raised the issue over there. What about on Erev Shabbos? We're going to burn it like a day before? Are you absolutely certain that there's no way that it could possibly be eaten? I mean, what if Kohanim show up on Shabbos that were lo nuchutz l'choma? Or what about if Eliyahu HaNavi was matir, something that we thought was taluya, and it really turns out to be tahora completely? And why don't we wait till the last possible moment? And so on and so forth. All of these issues are going to be included in the questions that we raise today. Now, so before we get into this sugya, because it's a highly technical sugya that has a lot to do with the nature of the prate dinim, I want to bring out to you the various elements that need to be taken into consideration in order for us to properly understand the Mishnah. And because of the fact that this Mishnah, Rabbi Osai, is one of the most poetic Mishnayos that Rebbe ever wrote, because he was able to include over here a massive amount of information density, that just seeing the way that the elements interrelate with each other and the multiple levels that this Mishnah could be construed is mind-boggling to the point of bringing you to tears. It is just simply so beautiful. But in order to be able to see its beauty and its poetry, it's essential that you not get bogged down by all of the issues that start getting confused because of the various elements. The beauty of the Mishnah lies in your being able to flow smoothly between these elements and to instantly see how every word could be interpreted in 20 different ways, which would force you to interrelate the entire Mishnah in 20 different ways, times 20, in order to get all the permutation. It's just absolutely staggering to see the way that everything interrelates. But because of that, in order to get a good grasp of the beauty of the Mishnah, you must not get bogged down by the details. You have to learn to swim in the details. Because of that, look, I mean, thank heavens we've done a lot of the work that was going to be brought up here in our learning about Kalim and all those this year anyway, right? So a lot of this is going to be Chazorah. So just let me go over with you as if we're talking on a kindergarten level, the issues that you need to know. Don't get insulted if we're just saying things that are obvious and so on, because there's probably value in just seeing the whole thing. And certainly there may be issues that you didn't take into consideration, don't remember from our learning over the course of the year. So let's just talk about the basic ideas. So remember that we have two general elements of Tumah. One of them is called the Avei Satuma, and the other one is called the Vlodei Satuma. Avei Satuma are split into Avi Avot HaTumah and Avot HaTumah. There's no difference between the impact that those two will have. That is to say that an Avi Avot HaTumah or an Av HaTumah, either of them, can make anything tummy, including people and including Kelim. A Vlod HaTumah cannot, midiraisa, be metame an Adam or Kelim. So the only difference between Avi Avot is that if there's an attenuation between the Avi Avot stage, nonetheless, the thing which the Avi Avot touches will still be able to be metame Adam v'kelim. But in terms of the impact, there is no difference between them. Then we have Vlodot HaTumah. Okay, so the Vlodot HaTumah are very much a function of what level of Kedusha we're talking about. Because remember, Tumah only takes hold where there is a level of Taira. There's no level of Taira, no level of Kedusha. Tumah is a meaningless concept. This was something we discussed on Friday when we were talking about the Parsha as well. So the same thing is true over here. If something is Chulin, it is much less sensitive than something which is Truma. If something is Truma, it's much less sensitive than something which is Kodesh. And therefore, different levels of Tumah will affect Chulin, Truma, and Kodesh differently. Furthermore, there is a difference in the objects of the Kabbalah's Tumah. Because, again, we have Adam and Kelim. Adam and Kelim are only going to be Mekabel Tumah from something which is an Av HaTumah, at least midiraisa. And then we have Eichlin, and we have Mashkin, and those things are somewhat different, possibly. So the case of Eichlin, one of the issues of Eichlin that we're going to be discussing over here, is whether midiraisa Eichlin can be metame Eichlin or not. Since the Pasuk says, Tamehu, in the whole story of the Kabbalah's Tumah from Sheretz that falls into a Kli, which we've been through so often when we were dealing with Kalim. The question is whether Tamehu means it's restricted to it itself being Tameh, but it cannot be Metameh other Ochlin or not. So we're going to see that the question of whether Ochlin Bichlal can be Metameh Ochlin is a machlokus in the Gemara here precisely to what extent. Ochlin being metame Ochlin, possibly legabe chulin may be impossible, but still be possible for truma. Or Ochlin being metame Ochlin may be impossible even for truma, but be possible for kachim. That's something to take into consideration. Another question is, if Ochlin are not metame Ochlin, but are Ochlin metame mashkin? Well, that depends on whether mashkin are really mekablin tuma midiraisa. And if Mashkin are Mekablin Tumah, can mashkin be metame other mashkin? And if they cannot be metame other mashkin, can they be metame ochlin? So then you might have a sequence of Adam being metame as an avatuma, because he touched a mace, which was an aviavos. He's now an avatuma. He touches a kli, because a kli could be metame from an av. The kli now becomes a rishon. The rishon, in turn, touches ochlin, which now becomes a sheni. The ochlin, in turn, touch a mashkin, which now becomes a shlishi. Does it become a shlishi? If it's mekabel tuma, well, that depends. Chulin does not have a concept of shlishi at all. It's not sensitive enough. Truma does have a concept of shlishi. However, it's not tame as a shlishi. It's only pasul as a shlishi. What is the difference whether something is tame or pasul? Again, as we've explained many times, something that is tame is defined as something which a tuma detector, like a Geiger counter, will be able to detect tuma coming out of it. If something is pasul, it doesn't have tuma coming out of it. It's just been ruined by the fact that it was affected by tuma. That's called pasul. Now, there's no such thing as a tame shlishi by truma, generally. There is such a thing as a tame shlishi by kodesh. The pasul truma of shlishi will not cause a revi, but a tame shlishi by kodesh will cause a revi. But a revi is only possible for kodesh. Okay? So that means the maximum tuma that you could reach would be a level of a revi for kodesh. Again, bepashtas, there are some interesting things which are gzeiros derabanan, which are milas that will affect chatas. That's not our business today. So therefore, when we're talking about ochlin, we have to worry about ochlin metame ochlin or not. Ochlin metame mashkin. Yes. Ochlin metame ochlin when it comes to kodesh. Is that different? Ochlin metame ochlin when it comes to truma. Is that different? Again, all of these things are machlokesin that we're going to need to be discussing. There's one big difference from the general rule, which has every single time there is a step in which A is betame B, there's also an attenuation that is associated with that step. So that if an aviavot touches something, that thing goes one step down and becomes an avot atuma. If an avot touches something, that thing goes one step down and becomes a rishon atuma, and so on. The rishon touches something, becomes a sheni. But there's one place where there is no attenuation. And that, you will recall, comes from the pasuk of Bechalal Cherev. Cherev harehu kechalal. That means that certainly when it's nogea, tumas meis, and only tumas meis, chalal. Tumas meis is the one thing that has particular cases where there's no attenuation. That is in cases where, now this is a machlokas rishonim, where a metal kli, according to many rishonim, or any kli other than a kli cheres, according to others, that touches an avi avot of a mate, remains itself an avi avot. If it touches an avot of a tameh mate, remains itself a tameh mate. And this, if you recall, led to the Mishnah that we had about, according to Rabbi Akiva, you could even get five different dargas, because you could have an Adam that touches the Kalim, and now that is instead Metame Adam, and then that Adam touches other Kalim, and then that is Metame in an Oel, which according to Rabbi Akiva was one level down. That was that Mishnah of five different levels you can get from Tumas Meis, all that would still be able to be Metame Kalim. Fine. So that's important to recall, and it's going to come up immediately in our sugya. Another thing that you need to know is that there are particular Tumas of a human being that the Torah defines as being attenuated by definition. So normally when an Adam is tame, the Adam starts being tame with a tuma that has either affected him from the outside, such as nogea bituma meis or be'ava tuma. And then normally if a person is mitame as a rishon, he goes to the mikveh and he becomes tahar. However, there are times when the Adam is himself the Av, because he's a Zav, or she's a Zava, Nida, and so on and so forth. And in those cases, we have oftentimes special situations in which we have either a situation in which someone is a tvul yom, and that's even when it's just a tumas erev, because a tvul yom means even though you went to the mikveh, you remain tamei until sunset. Or if it's a long-term tuma, even if it's an 80-day tuma, let's say a yoledes, who could be tameya for shmonim yom, she remains a tvul yom, which is in this case a special case. It's called tvulat yom aroch. She remains a tvulas yom for the full 80 days. She's not considered to be completely tahar until the sun sets on the 80th day. Then she becomes a mechusar kippurim. Now, what, and the same thing of true, of obviously in the case of a male in the same situation. So you can be a long-term tvul yom, you could be a tvul yom for a day, and then you could be a mechusar kippurim as long as you didn't bring your carbon on the next day for until the time that you bring it. What's the din over there? So even though the person began as an avatuma, but once he went to the mikveh and is a tvul yom, he then gets the din of a sheni latuma, which is very weird, a human who's a sheni. The reason that we call him that is because the level of tuma that he's capable of giving off is equivalent to an attenuated tuma from other circumstances like a kli and so on. Which means that for all intents and purposes, this tvul yom will only be able to affect truma or kachim. If he touches truma, he makes the truma posel, not tummy. If he touches kodesh, he makes the kodesh tummy, and that kodesh can make a revi. What about if he or she is a mechusar kippurim? So in that case, the Adam is defined as a shlishi, which means he will have no impact on truma, but will be able to be metame kodesh. So that's very important also to remember. Now, there's also, of course, tumas derabbanan, many tumas derabbanan. So one of the fundamental tumas derabbanan is that for sure, ochlin can be metame ochlin in all circumstances, even in chulin, as long, of course, as they're the requisite level. If the ochlin rishon, they can be metame chulin to be a sheni, but if they're a sheni, they can't be metame chulin to be a shlishi, because chulin doesn't know from shlishi. It's not sensitive enough to be a shlishi. Another thing that we have to take into consideration is what is the din of things that are mekabel tuma? Well, chulin that is tame, that is to say, it's a rishon or a sheni, which is the maximum tuma that it can take, is basically none of your business. Because the Torah does not give any dinim that are associated with chulin being tame. It only becomes your business if that chulin touches kodesh or truma. Now, then it's very much your business, yes. However, there were always people that were makbet to even eat chulin betaira. So it's their business if they want to make sure that their truma is A-OK, their chulin is A-OK, and it's just the same as truma. And this is very common if somebody is a kohen, particularly. He doesn't want some things in his house, which he's going to be involved in eating while it's tamei, and other things which you could possibly confuse, which is a bottle of wine, a truma in his refrigerator. That would be terrible. So it was very common for people to be makbid on eating chulin betaira if they needed to be eating truma. But that's called chulin altairas truma. How about if you were a kohen at the time of the Beis HaMikdash and you actually might have some kodesh in your refrigerator? So now in that case, you might be very makbid on your chulin and treat it as if it's kodesh, not just truma. That's called chulin shenasu altairas hakodesh. Machlokis, whether your intent to keep it that way actually adds the additional dinim of it, sensitivity, minerabonah, which would allow it to really become tame. Furthermore, there's another issue. When it comes to kodesh, anything that is tame is needed to be burned, not to be used, even if it's something that's usable. So let's say you have oil of kodesh that had been set aside for menachas. You can't use it by putting it into a candle or something and saying, well, I'm not eating it. I'm just being nene from it. Kodesh, which is tame, is useless. You can't derive any benefit from it. But truma, which is tame, is not necessarily useless. Because if it does have some function other than eating, so let's say shemen. Shemen has a very valuable function. It can be burned in a candle. in a lamp. Rene is going to jump if I say candle. It can be burned in a lamp. So because of that, there's a difference between shemen, which is called shemen sreifa, and that means shemen truma, that's tmeo, which is usable, as opposed to kodesh, which is tame, which is not called heter of shemen sreifa. That's also important. Another question, which is very important to us, is what is the meaning of the pasuk? V'ninatati lechem et mishmeret trumotai. Now, mishmeret trumotai implies that there are two types of trumas. Not one, two types of truma which you must protect. Mishmeret means make sure that you protect it. So then that means what? Well, it could mean a lot of things. It could mean you have to make sure that if the shema, if the truma is tohar, you have to protect it, that's for sure. It might add, with the Lashon Rabbim of Mishmeret Trumotai, that even if the truma is tmeya, you also have to protect it in the event that it's usable. So in other words, let's say it's Shemen Sreifa. So then you can't just allow that to be ruined. You have to take care of it and make sure that it will be usable as Shemen Sreifa. How about if you have a truma that you cannot use, but the reason you cannot use it is because you're not sure if you can use it or not? What's the response to that? Do we say that, well, since you don't know, there's a theoretical need to protect it in the event that it's tahar, even though you don't know that it's tahar? Or do you say, look, since I don't know if it's tahar, then for all intents and purposes, when it comes to my usage, it's off limits, and therefore I don't have to protect it? And that, of course, is right on the boundary of if it's unusable for some other reason, such as it's Erev Pesach and it's going to be usher to eat anyway, or usher pinenef from anyway, even though that may only be Durabbanan, I can't use it, must I protect it? That's how we got into this in the beginning. So it's because of that, taking all of this into consideration, that we bring up this Mishnah, and the way that Rebbe so fabulously constructed this Mishnah is that it makes absolutely no sense, or it makes sense on 20 different levels, depending on how it is that we're going to be looking at it. So it's certainly usher to be metame truma biyadayim because of mishmeret trumotai. It is certainly usher to be metame kachim because of bechol kodesh lo tiga, which is said in the case of the yoledet. She's got to be very careful not to wreck kodesh. And that gives us now our opening here to discuss, okay, but what if it's not usable kodesh? What if it's not usable truma? And then what level of not usable? And then is the question of the usability a question of iser tuma, diraisa tuma, dirabonan tuma, iser diraisa, or iser midrabonan, or logistical? It doesn't taste good anymore, so nobody wants to eat it. Maybe it was an ifsame achilas kelep. All of that has to be taken into consideration, and that is going to open up multiple levels of interpretation of what is going on. So let us begin with the Mishnah of Rabbi Hanina, Skan HaKohanim, and Michael El Choyel, B'Shem Hashem, Naaseh V'Nasliach. Okay, so Rabbi Hanina, Skan HaKohanim, Omer, you should just know that Mimeyem Shel Kohanim Lo Nimne'u B'Lisrof Et HaBasar Shenitma B'Vlad HaTumah Ima basar shenitma ba'ava tuma, afa pish mosifim tuma al tumato. You got to know that the Kohanim never, what do you mean never? Now, Tosus understands never means whether we were talking about in the later days where we've got this, a lot of gezeiras derabonan, and once upon a time we didn't have those gezeiras. So you should know never was this a problem. Even before we came up with questions of things that I'm going to be burning that nowadays would be considered to be tamei with tamei. Once upon a time, before the Rabbanan made gezeiras that made, let's say, mashkim that touch a kli, and not all mashkim are chayzim liyos rishain, which is a very important thing to know. The Chachamim added, you remember back in Shabbos, we had the Yudches Tavar. Normally, kelim cannot be makabel tuma from mashkin. For sure, because mashkin are always on a none-av level. However, There's a big problem with Mashkin, and that is they could be confused with body fluids. Now, body fluids can certainly be metame kalim, because body fluids are often mayanot, and they will be metame as an avatuma. And therefore, the Chachomim made gezerah. So since you have dam nida, you have shechvat zera, you have all the mayanos of a zov, his tears, urine, and so on and so forth, these things could very easily be confused with a normal types of liquids that are fruit juices or water or whatever. So because of that, we want to make sure that we're going to treat mashkin with a greater chumrah, and we'll even allow them to be metame kalim. There's another reason to treat mashkin more chumrah so that it should be able to be metame things where ochlin cannot, although not necessarily kalim, and that is for an interesting reason, namely that for food to be able to be mekabel tuma, it needs hechsher. That means to say it needs to be exposed to one of the sheva mashkin. And that way to remember that was Yad Dam Shachat, you'll remember. And that means any of those and only those that touch something when it's no longer attached to the ground, make it suitable for Kabbalah's Tumah. But obviously, mashkin don't need heksher with other mashkin, and therefore, they are more likely to be Mekabel Tumah than an Ochlin is. And that's why we find certain gezeris that affect mashkin, Midrabbanan, that treat them with greater chumrah than questions of an Ochlin be Mekabel Tumah. So when Rabbi Chanina Sgana Kohanim says never, he means never. In other words, you don't need to take into consideration the impact of these gezeras, and we'll see where that becomes important, take it into consideration later. But the Kohanim never had a problem in burning a busser that had become tamei by touching a Vlad Atuma. So that means, let's say, that it touched a Rishon Atuma, right? So now this busser is now a Sheni Bituma. Is it? Well, it depends what kind of Rishon it touched, doesn't it? I don't know. Are we sure that Ochlin is Metame Ochlin? Maybe we are, maybe we're not. Maybe it would be Metame Ochlin only Midrabana. Or maybe if we're talking about Kodesh, it would be Metame even D'Oraisa. Gee, I don't know. So Rabbi Chanina Sgana Kohanim might be talking about something Tame Midrabana and adding to it a higher Darga of Tuma Midrabana. Or he might be talking about something that's something midrabbanan and adding a higher level of to it midrabbanan. That's very unclear. But in any event, if you had busser, it was nitma bevlad hatuma. Now, there's other ways that things could be tummy bevlad hatuma. And maybe this busser was mekabel tuma from mashkin in the first place. Mashkin, which were rishon, and then they were betame, this busser to be a sheni. I'm not sure. But in any event, this busser is only a sheni, because it was a metame bevlad hatuma. I'm not sure whether we'd be in D'Oraisa D'Rabbana. And it was okay to burn that tuma, that kodesh. This is in the Beis HaMikdash it's referring to. Obviously, if it's busser, it isn't truma, right? We're talking about kodesh. Together with busser that became tame from touching an avat tuma. Now, what would that mean? Well, if busser touched an avatuma, what would it be its status? It would be a rishon l'tuma, right? Okay, so what's the problem? If the busser is going to be metame the other busser, it's going to just make it a sheni again. I thought we started off with a sheni. So you're not saying anything very intelligent. Gee, the Chachomim never cared about burning sheni with rishon. Why should they? Because the rishon's going to touch the sheni and do what? Make it a sheni? It already is a sheni. So already right at the beginning of the Mishnah, something is weird. But in any event, as you, a reader who's naive thinks, oh, well, they put things that are tummy as a rishon together with things that are tummy as a sheni. Shouldn't that be a no-no? Of course it shouldn't be a no-no, because there's nothing wrong with having different levels of tumah together. It's only to be mitame kodesh that there's a problem because of bechol kodesh lo tigah. So obviously the Gemara is going to have to change this into understanding that the nature of the words bivlad hatuma means some lower level of attenuated tuma. Doesn't mean literally first level of vlad. It could mean the vlad of a vlad, the vlad of a vlad of a vlad, because remember that the overall difference is between av and vlad. So we just use the general terminology of vlad. Okay, so then let's assume that what he means is it's okay to burn something that was only, let's say, a shlishi together with something that's a rishon, and that would make it a sheni, and that would be okay. But then, was it a shlishi b'diraisa or a shlishi b'dirabbana? So is he saying you're allowed to be metame, something that's tame d'iraisa with a higher level of tumen b'dirabbana? I mean, that doesn't sound so impressive. Oh, we got to think about, so, okay, what's the big deal? Hosif Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, not only that, I'll tell you something, an even bigger chiddush. V'yomar, mimeim shokoanim lo nimnu milahadlik et hashemen shenifsal betvul yom. Now, right now, we are talking about truma, obviously, because there is no such thing as being madlik shemen of kodesh that's possible. So we've switched gears over here. And Rabbi Akiva wants to talk about a case where we've got shemen that became possible with the tvul yom. Shemen shel truma that became possible with the tvul yom has what status as we defined before? The tvul yom has a din of a sheni, so it's possible. It's shlishi, but not tame as a shlishi. It's only possible as a shlishi, right? So it comes along Rabbi Akiva and said, and even so, you could put it inside of a lamp that became tame from a tame mace. Afal pisha mosifim tuma al tumato, even though you would now, if it's tame betame mace, then it is going to be turning this into a rishon latuma. Because if this ner touched tame mace, the ner became a rishon, and it's touching the oil, and now the shemen srefa is a sheni, not only a shlishi. I thought that's exactly what Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim said. Gee, I don't know. There might be differences here. Maybe the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim is the difference between D'oraisa and D'rabbanan. Maybe it's the difference between Tomei adding Tuma or Paso adding Tuma. I don't know. There may be other issues. Let's take a look and see if we can figure out what it is that he says I'm adding. Okay. Even though he's being Mosif Tuma al Tumas. Omer Rabbi Meir. Well, we can learn something very important from here, and that is why we bring this Mishnah here. What we can learn from this is that back in our sugya of Erev Pesach, which is why we brought this up, you can now see from here, Midivreim Lamadnu, that you could burn truma that is completely tahor with truma that is tamei on Pesach. How is that? I don't know. Maybe Rabbi Meir is taking for granted that it's only the unusability of the thing that matters, and it doesn't matter whether it's osur, and it doesn't matter whether it's tamei, and therefore, if it's tamei, so what's the difference if you're going to burn it? It says over here you can mess it up by being over on Mishmeret Trumotai once it's tamei, so I guess you could be over on Mishmeret Trumotai once it's useless, because Mishmeret Trumotai only makes sense if it's usable, and anyway it isn't usable, so who cares? That may be what he's saying, but then wouldn't it make a difference whether it's usable midiraisa or midrabanan? Because what we were talking about was burning truma in the sixth hour, and in the sixth hour it's only also midrabanan. But does that mean that the Mishnah was talking about it, Rabbanan? And he's bringing a raya somehow from Bosa that became Tame. I mean, who is he referring to? Is he referring to what Rabbi Akiva said, where we were talking about a D'oraisa? Or is he referring to what Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim said, where we weren't sure, Bichlal, if we could work out a case that's talking about a D'oraisa? And if it were, can he derive a D'rabbanan from a D'oraisa? And can he derive the din of Isser from a din of Tuma? Gosh, this is quite a weird statement. And Rabbi Yossi, in fact, immediately responds, no, it doesn't prove anything. Now, why doesn't it prove anything? Does it not prove anything because Rabbi Yossi indeed holds that you cannot compare Isser to Tuma? Is that his problem? Is Rabbi Yossi complaining that one is a D'oraisa and one is a D'rabbanan? I don't know. All possibilities, but of course it depends on how we understood what Rabbi Meir was saying. Was Rabbi Meir proving his deal that it's okay to burn it from Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim? Or was he proving it from Rabbi Akiva? Well, until we know that, we won't know what Rabbi Yossi answers. What's worse is that Rabbi Yossi then throws in a complete non sequitur, which is absolutely wild. Umodim Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, shesorfim zola atzma, Vezolatzman. What in the world does... We never spoke about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua anywhere. I mean, yes, we know that there is a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about certain dinim of whether you're allowed to burn the truma, which is tluya, or do you have to be very careful to protect it, or can you expose it to the elements, but that's not the same as burning it, so how in the world would that relate to this anyway? Is he trying to bring a raya? Is this just a non sequitur to Rabbi Meir, who was talking about Rabbi Hanina's Gan HaKohanim? Or is there some hidden connection between what Rabbi Meir said and the Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, about what the din is of protecting Truma that is in a state of Suffolk? And the fact that Rabbi Eliezer, everybody seems to be made about real Tuma. It's only about a Suffolk. If it was Tuluya and a Tamea there, you have a machlokas. But if one is Tame and one is Tar, of course you're not allowed to burn them together. Yes, I understand, but they weren't talking about a case where it was Erev Pesach and it was going to be burned anyway. So why is he bringing this up? But what they do argue about is if there's a Suffolk about the Truma, which means that for all intents and purposes, you can't eat it anyway. So do you have to watch over it or not? Where over there, it's indeed a machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you're not allowed to do anything to it. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, you can even put it together with vaday tameh. All right, so now we're left with a Mishnah with no understanding, really, that we'd be able to bank on at all. So let's first start off with the statement of Rabbi Hanina, who seems to be saying absolutely nothing. Because, I mean, what he's telling me is that I'm allowed to burn something with something that will not affect it in any way. I guess, mechte. The fact that he begins with baser shenitma bevlad hatuma. Okay, what is the state of baser that was touched by a vlad hatuma? The vlad hatuma, we're assuming, is a rishon. That's the first level of vlad. What is the din of the baser that touches the rishon? It's a sheni. So now when he's burning it, kisarfli bade baser, he's burning it with meat that touched an avatuma. What happens to it? Well, the meat that touched the avatum is a rishon, and it would then touch this meat and would make it a sheni. But it already was a sheni. I don't know what's going on over here. So then, my avi sheni. So then it's sheni v'sheniu. Why are you telling me mosif lo tuma? You're not being mosif tuma. My mosif tuma tuma toika. Om revira, well. Obviously, when it says vlad, it might mean vlad, okay? So vlad of a vlad would mean that if it touched a sheni, so then it became a shlishi. And what he's saying is that that shlishi would be allowed to be burned with a vlad, which would then make it a sheni. And he is saying that a shlishi b'kodesh can be burned in such a way that it now becomes a sheni l'kodesh. But how did it be? I don't understand. If you're burning a piece of meat with another piece of meat, I thought that food is not metame other food. Because doesn't it say in the Braisa Beferish, the Tanya, Yocho ye ocho metame ocho, you might think food can be metame food. Tamud lomar, v'chiyutan mayim alzerav anafal nivlatam alav, tame hu. If a sheretz will fall on some food, zera in this case of a plant, and it was initially watered with something, got wet with one of the Sheva Mashkim, then that food will be Tameh. It doesn't say will be Tameh. It says it and only it will be Tameh, which implies it cannot now cause Tameh for something else. So then I don't understand. So then, of course, I can burn food with food, for heaven's sakes. Food can't be Metameh food. So what are you telling me? It's a nonsensical statement. I mean, look, according to Abaye, it still makes sense, because Abaye says that the limitation in the pasuk of Tamehu is limited to chulin. But when it comes to truma v'kachim, actually, ochlin can be metame ochlin, and we're going to see later on where we would derive that from, according to Abaye. And even according to Ravada Barava, Mishmei Derava argues on Abaye, and he says even truma, both chulin and truma, you do not have a problem of Ochlin being Metame Ochlin, but he agrees that Bekachim, that Ochlin are Metame Ochlin, fine. So now the statement of Rabbi Hanina makes sense. The statement is basically saying that if you have a Shlishi of Kodesh, you can burn it with a Rishon, which will make the Shlishi into a Sheni, even though it's meat touching meat, because when it comes to Kodesh, you will, in fact, add tum. Okay, fine. But what if you don't hold of either of these shitas? Remember that Ravina is telling us later. Ravina says, look, read my lips. I mean, read the pasuk, okay? The pasuk said, tamehu. Did you see anything in the pasuk about Kodesh? No. Did you see any pasuk in Truma? No. So the pasuk is telling me straight out, I'm going to hang what we're talking about. Mikra Malay, it's a simple, straightforward pasuk. Something is Mekabel Tuma as an Eichlin. It can't pass it on. That's all. So how, according to Ravina, can you explain Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim? If Mikra Mole Dibra Katuv Loshna Chulin Loshna Truma Loshna Kachim Eino Seki Yotzibo, then Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim is talking nonsense. Ma'ikala Meimar. Well, no, it's not so problematic. We may be talking about a case, apparently, where the meat has liquid on it. And since there's liquid on it, the meat can be metame the liquid, and then the liquid can go and be metame another piece of meat. And that's what happened over here. Now, this sounds very simple on the surface. However, unfortunately, we're going to discover later on that there is a special din about liquids in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai, possibly. Or may only refer to things that would have been tamei de rabbana. Another question. And that is called Mashke Beit Matbichaya. Mashkim that are found in the Beis HaMikdash are not able to be Bekabel Tuma. Bekabel Tuma? Maybe. Machshir L'Tuma? Maybe. Bezan Tuma? Maybe. Mashke Beit Matbichaya, meaning anything in the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the water that was used to clean off the Evorim? The dam that came off the Evorim? Maybe. Maybe it's Mashka Debei Matbechaya, which is liquids from the Mizbeach. But then it would be referring to things like wine and oil. Maybe all of those things are additional problems that we're going to have to be dealing with later. But again, let's just take it on the simplest level. Okay, so we've got two possibilities now. Either Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim is talking about a shlishi that we're turning into a sheni, and Basar can be Metame Basar in this particular case, or Basar can't be Metame Basar, but the Basar has liquid on it, a type of liquid that will be able to be Mekabel Tuma. That liquid will be Mekabel Tuma and will be Metame the Basar that it comes in touch with, and therefore there is going to be an addition of Tuma, and that's not a problem. Maybe that was the source of Rebbe Meir saying you could do the same thing on Erev Pesach using Isser instead of Tuma. Maybe. That's a possibility. We'll see about that. Okay, so it might be talking about water. So, but then why don't you say that? Why did you say you're allowed to burn basar with basar? Why didn't you say you're allowed to burn basar? You can burn it with basar and mashkim. You didn't say anything about mashkin, Rebbe Chanina Skanan Kohanim. That's what you should have said. Well, you're right. We would have to accept, then, that according to Rabbi Ravina, who says that Ochlin cannot be Metame Ochlin, then what Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim would be saying is, you can be Metame Ochlin, of course, only Midrabanan, and that it would be, therefore, okay to add a Tuma Midrabanan. That's much less of a big deal, right? But then it would still be a chiddush. So you can make a shlishi, which would be a shlishi d'oraisa, turn it into a sheni, and a sheni would be midrabbana. That would be the only problem that he would be talking about. In which case, we need to understand what Rabbi Akiva was mosif in different ways, because obviously it depends what Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim was saying in order for us to understand what Rabbi Akiva was being mosif, and that will change what it was that Rabbi Meir was saying about Medivrayim, which will change what it was that Rabbi Yossi was saying about it's Eina Min Amida, because every piece is related to every other piece, and therefore each piece has to have the same multiple layers of interpretation for each possible interpretation of the other pieces. and to try to make sense of the Mishnah before we know precisely what Rabbi Chanina's Kanakonim was saying means we won't know what Rabbi Akiva is being Mosif, which means we won't know what Rabbi Meir is deriving, which means we won't know what Rabbi Yossi is talking about, which means that his reference to Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer is totally off the wall, and that leaves us completely scratching our head. Fine. So now taking...
Please move the mic closer.
Move the mic closer?
Yeah, it was harder to hear Rabbi's voice.
This is as close
as 2-3 minutes.
This is as close as it ever gets, as far as I know, right? You didn't want me to water the mic or anything, right? No.
We're not talking about Chatas because Rebbe's pleading the fifth.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Next. So, Hosif Rebbe Akiva, Miyameyem Shokoanim, Lo Nimna'u Milahad Lika. Hold on a second. What is Rebbe Akiva talking about? He said, the Kohanim would never really mind taking oil that had been nifsav of the tvuyon. What's the din of oil that was nifsav of the tvuyon? We said a tvuyon was a sheni, and that would make the oil of truma posel, not tame, posel as a shlishi, and you could put that into a lamp that was tame even with tame mace. All right. So my first question is, michte shemen shenifsav b'tvuyon. What is that? It's a shlishi. When you are madlik that in a ner that became tame with a tame mate, all right, what does it become? The ner touched someone who is tame mate. The person who is tame mate is an av hatuma. The ner becomes a rishon latuma. The oil that was, if he's madlik it in a ner, so then it becomes now a sheni. So then you're, what are you saying? You're saying that I'm allowed to turn the shlishi that touched the tvuyom, put it into this ner, which will make it a sheni. Gee, that sounds awfully familiar. It's exactly what Reb Chanina's Kanakonim said, darn it. I understand. That's word for word. I mean, so what are you telling me, my kamashron? Shlishi mutter lasoto sheni? Hainuach, we just figured out that that's exactly what Reb Chanina's Kanakonim was saying. So now what in the heck is Rabbi Akiva saying? Ah, says Rabbi Yehuda, note that there is another option over here, because since we're talking about a ner shenitma b'tame mate, aha, there's a special din by a tame mate. And what is that? Cherev hareu kichalal. Aha. So, but wait a minute. Normally, the menorah is made out of cheres, and a cheres can never be mekabel tumah as an av, as you will recall from Kalim. We're not talking about made out of cheres. We're talking about a good old-fashioned metal lamp. So a metal lamp that is touched by someone who is an av hatuma because he touched a mate is now in the cherev hareo kechalal category, which means it's not attenuated. So if this lamp is now remains an avatuma, so since Rachmana Omar b'chalal cherev, from which we learn cherev hareo kechalal, that we retain the same level, so then that means that the lamp is still an avatuma. That would mean that it is going to turn the oil in it into a rishon latuma. And that is a much bigger chiddush. V'kasova shlishi mutar la'asoto rishon. Right? I mean, why? Why? Why isn't there a simple answer? The simple answer is, Rabbi Akiva was talking about a tfuyom who touched truma. What's the din of a sheni that touches truma? It becomes posel. Rabbi Chanina's Kanakohanim was talking about a shlishi, which was kodesh. What's the din of a shlishi that's kodesh? It's tame, not posel. So isn't that an obvious hosafa? Rabbi Akiva is saying you can make a shlishi, which is posel, into a sheni, which is tame. And Rabbi Chanina said you can make a shlishi, which is tame, into a sheni, which is tame. I mean, to turn something posel into something tame is a major impact, because before it wasn't able to be matame anything, and now it is able to be matame something. That's a disaster. To turn a sheni into a shlishi, a shlishi into a sheni, big deal. It was tame before, it's tame now. So why isn't that enough of an answer? Why did you have to come up with Cherev Hareo Kechalal? So my duke, the Rebbe Yudah Lukmei ben Ner Shomatechet, leave things as they were. Forget about Cherev Hareo Kechalal. Forget about metal, okay? All that you need to say is that the Hosif is as follows. My Hosif, the Iluhatam, Rebbe Chanina Skana Kohanim, was talking about Tomei and Tomei. And over here, Rebbe Akiva is adding even Pasov Tomei. But you, by making this new idea of Cherev Hareo Kechalal, you have made Rebbe Akiva say more than he may have intended. How do you know that Rebbe Akiva meant to say you can even make it a Rishon? Maybe all he meant to say is that you could turn a Shlishi, which is Pasol, into a Sheni, but not into a Rishon. Ah, says Rava, there was no choice because of a beautiful Diak. Look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah was driving Rebbe Yudah nuts. Masizan Gashite, can you explain to me why in the world Rebbe Akiva would have said, you can put it into a Ner that was Nitma B'Tomei Mace? How in the world did Tomei Mace get in here, for heaven's sakes? Just say Shenitma B'Avatuma. I don't know. A Sheretz. I mean, anything. We have to be talking about Dafka Tomei Mace. There's only one reason to speak about Tomei Mace and no other reason at all. And what would that reason be? Cherev Hareo Kechalal, which is a din specifically in Tumas Mace and only in Tumas Mace. That is the problem. So it's clear from that that Rabbi Akiva meant to add more than simply the question of Pusel to Tomei. He meant to actually say Tomei even as a Rishon, which is a big deal. So Ella Ezeho Davashi Chalukatu Mato Ben Tumas Mace L'Sheretz. Explain to me the one thing where it will make a difference is something touches an avatuma, which is sheretz, or an avatuma is mace. There's only one thing, and that is Havei Omer Zematechet, because since it's metal, it now gets into the problem of Cherev Hareo Kechalal. Omar Rava, okay, but that brings us to a very important diak, because it proves that Shmamina, Kasova Rebbe Akiva, Tumat Mashkin Letamei Acherim is the Oraita. Now, as we mentioned in the introduction, it is not so clear what the status of Mashkin are. Can Mashkin be Makabel Tuma? Can Mashkin pass on Tuma? Well, it's clear that Rabbi Akiva must hold that when Mashkin are Makabel Tuma, they can pass on Tuma. Because, look, if you're going to tell me that the whole idea is only a Derabbanan, so then let's get back to what this candle is actually, I keep saying candle, sorry, Barnea. Let's get back to what it is that this lamp is supposed to be doing here, okay? I mean, I understand it makes a difference. As you said, it turned it from a Shlishi into a Rishon. Okay, what is the difference if it's a Shlishi or a Rishon? Its own being Tomei? It can't be Matame anything if you hold Mashkin or not Matame anything. So if it can't be Matame anything, guess what it's called? Ta-ta-dan-tam, puzzle. Ha, but it was puzzle. So there's no differences in puzzle from a Rishon, puzzle from a Sheni, puzzle. I don't give a hang. It's puzzle, it's puzzle, it's puzzle. So then if that's the case, Rabbi Akiva wasn't adding anything. He's saying the Kohanim never cared about turning Shemen that's puzzle into Shemen that's puzzle. Come on, man. So it must be that he holds that actually there's not, it's not true to say that Mashkin can only be Psulin. Mashkin can be Tmeim. And therefore the difference is that when it was Pasul and it was only in touch with the Psul, with a Tvul Yom, it couldn't make anything else Tamei. And now when it becomes a Rishon, it can make things Tamei. And therefore you see that it's D'Oraisa. Where? I understand. All you could tell me is, therefore, you see that it's Matame. You can't tell me it's Matame D'Oraisa. Maybe it's Matame D'Rabbanan. I mean, that's what we said in Reb Chanina's Kana Kohanim. So maybe all that Rebbe Akiva was saying is, you, Rebbe Chanina's Kana Kohanim, according to Ravina, are only saying that you can add a Tumah D'Rabbanan of a Sheni to a Tumah D'Rabbanan of a Shlishi. And I say, Rebbe Chanina's Kana Kohanim, that you can even add a Tumah D'Rabbanan of Mashkin of to be a Sheni to Mashkin that were only Pasul. What's your problem, man? So how are you coming out with the idea that it must be that it's a D'Oraisa? No. If it's only Darabbanan, then Rabbi Akiva no longer makes sense. Because remember, Rabbi Akiva kept stressing that the lamp in this case is an Av Atuma. And that is what allowed it to be a Rishon Midiraisa. It touched an Av Hatuma, right? Why does it have to touch an Av Hatuma? Even if the Shemen that I put into this Nair would be a Rishon or a Sheni, what difference would it make? Midirabbanan, anything that is a Mashkin is by definition a Rishon. So let's say it would have been something that was mekabel only to be a sheni. It's still, to be a shlishi, it's still going to turn around and be a rishon. Because remember the Mishnah. As the Mishnah explains, the halacha is, kol aposel et atruma, metame mashkin lihiyot techila chutz mitfuyom. That's the whole point. A tfuyom who touches anything that is mashkin does not make it into a Rishon. Why is this? Because the whole din is only a Darabbanan, that the Rabbanan were machmir and insisted that we're going to actually make things more chomer than they should be, D'oraisa. Why is that? Because as I explained to you earlier, Mashkin are very easily mekabel tuma as opposed to Ochlin. And because of that, we wanted the Kohanim to be very machmir on them. And therefore, we gave it this din. But when it comes to a Tfuyom, the Kohanim are extremely careful about Tfuyom anyway. We don't need to. It's not a problem of Mashkin. Remember, they're very careful about a Tfuyom coming into contact with anything because that is always going to be a problem in the Beis HaMikdash. Mashkin, very often are not shy to being, are they going to be treated as if they were just Ochlin, which would be terrible because they're much worse than Ochlin. There we make a gezera. So therefore, anything that passes truma is metame mashkin lios trila, and it should make no difference to me what the din would be about its needing to be necessarily tame because it would be touched an avatuma, at something which touched an avatuma. I don't care what it touched. Anything that it touched, as long as it wasn't a tluyom, would have turned it into a rishon. So it's very simple. Rabbi Akiva only needed to say, you're allowed to, the Kohanim never had any problem using Shemen of Truma that had touched the Tvuyom and therefore is only Pasul, burning it with Shemen that had become Tameh from anything else besides the Tvuyom, which would have meant that it was a Rishon, and that would be okay. That's all he needed to say. Instead, he makes this big fuss about something that had touched a Tameh Mace. So Elosh Mamina D'Oraisa, so clearly, what we're talking about over here is changes in the D'oraisa, and this is the whole point of what Rabbi Akiva was coming to add. Okay, so we have so far two possibilities. That was Rabbi Akiva was coming to teach me stam that, look, you can even turn something that's posel into something that's tameh. And we added to that. No, it's more than that. It's that Rabbi Akiva was coming to tell me that something that's posel you can actually turn into a Rishon, not just into a Sheni. And now it turns out, oh my God, this changes the whole thing, that the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Hanina's Kana Kohani may be the difference between a D'oraisa and a D'rabbanan, which then obviates all the discussion that we had until now about what's the big Kiddush of Rabbi Akiva. Of course, a big Kiddush. Rabbi Hanina's Kana Kohani, according to Ravina, was talking about adding a Tumah D'rabbanan, and Rabbi Akiva is clearly talking about adding a Tumah D'oraisa, because otherwise, as we just proved, why did he have to go through this rigmarole of talking about a Ner that touched an Av Atumah? So there's really three separate issues here. Rabbi Akiva is adding its D'oraisa. Rabbi Akiva is adding the change from something that's posel to something that's tameh, and Rabbi Akiva is adding the change of a shlishi to a rishon as opposed to just a sheni. So now we see that Rabbi Akiva definitely has got a lot to say for himself. The question is, what does Rabbi Meir learn from them? Midivrehem lamadnu, we learn out, I mean, how in the world do we learn out that you can burn chometz, which is tohar truma, together with tuma, and go ahead and be metame things? How did we get that? I mean, it doesn't seem to be the same as anything that we learned so far. I mean, from whom? Midivrei Daman. We'll just finish with this quickly, and we'll go back over it tomorrow. So Midivrei Daman, what are we mayor saying? From their words. Who exactly is they? I mean, from Rabbi Hanina's Gan HaKohanim? What in the world? Rabbi Hanina's Gan HaKohanim was talking a case in which you have something that's Tumei, and you're burning it with something that's Tumei, okay? How can you learn from that you can burn something that's Tahar with something that's Tumei? I don't understand. If it's from Rabbi Akiva, it's also not similar. I mean, over there you had something that's Pusel, and you're burning it with something that's Tumei, the Truma. Over here you want to tell me Truma that's completely Tahar, I'm allowed to burn? I don't think this has anything to do not with Rabbi Akiva and not with Rabbi Hanina Gan HaKohanim. What in the world is Rabbi Meir talking about? I mean, it may be that Rabbi Meir has his own idiosyncratic approach to the Mishnah. I mean, that's possible, but that we will examine tomorrow, because then that would mean that, of course, we now come to the next problem, which is until we understood Rabbi Hanina's Gan HaKohanim and Rabbi Akiva, we couldn't understand Rabbi Meir. But now Rabbi Meir provides a check on how we understood Rabbi Hanina's Gan HaKohanim and Rabbi Akiva, because it has to follow from what it is that we thought Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Hanina's Gan HaKohanim were saying, that Rabbi Meir's statement of, well, that proves, and it sure does not seem to prove anything, so maybe we were wrong. To be continued tomorrow.